You know, I think today we live in this world of a lot of job descriptions that are really fanciful and all of this kind of stuff, but some of them lack very specific skills. But I think organizations are really going to start going to more skills-based thinking for positions and jobs.
You're listening to Learning Leader Spotlight, interviews with corporate L&D leaders. On each episode, we sit down with key industry experts to discover more about what's happening in the world of learning and development, from current trends and insights to the most valuable lessons learned along the way. Join us for a fresh perspective on all things training and the best direction forward. Here's your host, Leanne Lankford.
Hi, welcome to Learning Leader Spotlight, the podcast where we interview the learning leaders of today to help the learning leaders of tomorrow. I'm your host, Leanne Lankford. I'm the president of Training Pros. Training Pros is a learning and development contract staffing company where we provide learning and development consultants to corporate L&D leaders. We like to say, when you have more projects than people, let us find you the right consultant to start your project with confidence. I am really excited today about our guest. Today we have Carrie Berg, the Vice President of Learning and Development from Teladoc Health. Welcome, Carrie.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Carrie and I were just discussing that soon she would be Dr. Carrie Berg, so I'm excited about that.
Yes, so am I. I'm so excited for it to be over.
It's a big accomplishment. So why don't you share with our audience 60 seconds about who you are and what you do?
Sure. So I lead the learning and development and talent teams at Teladoc Health. So we are actively involved in all of the training programs globally. And I operate a centralized function. So I have compliance training and our physician training, along with sales training and our broad kind of enterprise training programs all under me, as well as our various talent initiatives, such as succession planning and performance reviews and everything else. So a rather large remit, but I have a pretty amazing team that helps me stay on top of all of it. I love being in the healthcare space because it's always changing and always growing. So very exciting job.
That is definitely quite a broad list of areas that you deal with.
Yeah, every day is different, for sure.
One of the best things about being in L&D, every day different.
Yes, absolutely.
So would you share with our audience what first attracted you to learning and development, how you first got here?
It's funny how I got here, because my dad was a teacher and he always would tell me, like, you would be so good at teaching. But it wasn't until I started my career in med device and I had a healthcare background and I was selling, and the company was like, you know, you're really good at explaining these complex health concepts to people who don't know them. And I was like, oh, really? And so I got into this training role that over time evolved from clinical training to sales training to broader learning and development. Because you couldn't easily say that training is training, but I had to definitely develop my skills over that time. And I've learned so much about different styles of training, different audiences, different topics, and all of that. And it's such a complex space to be in. And I think what's fascinating to me, having a sales background, is L&D is always kind of a nice to have and not always a must have. And I've spent my entire career trying to make L&D a must have and selling the value of it all the time. So I've kind of had a really interesting journey from dad saying, you should do this, to a business telling me you should do this, to really making it my career and being able to play in a lot of different types of learning environments with a lot of different audiences on a lot of different topics. But it's been fun.
So that's a great story. I find that most people got here along some kind of path like this. I was doing this and I was really good at the training that we had to do and I loved it. So I'd be just kept going into it. I do recall from my days in corporate, which has been a while, that selling, the need for our services was a constant battle.
Yes. I mean, and I think those of us in the L&D profession, we're not always natural salespeople. In fact, we shy away from it and we don't like it at all. But it's maybe not so much selling, but the ability to kind of influence and ensure that what you're doing is the right thing for the business and that you're strategically aligned and that you're adding value to the business and your programs are driving revenue and growth in a certain way and be able to articulate that really well. And I do think that pulls on your extroversion skills and it pulls on your ability to articulate what you're doing really well.
Agreed. Yes. You have to add value, do a great job at it, and tell the story.
Yes. Yeah.
What are the biggest changes? You've been in L&D a while. What are the biggest changes you've seen in learning and development?
So I might answer this differently than others, because you could easily say AI and the pandemic. But I think one of the biggest changes I have seen is that startup companies are bringing in L&D talent a lot earlier now than they did before. So you could see companies around for 10 years or 15 years, and they still have actually not a strong HR department and not a strong L&D department. But what I'm seeing now is a lot of these startups are hiring and building talent and L&D teams a lot earlier, which told me that this newer generation of CEOs and entrepreneurs and leaders are seeing the value of L&D and seeing how it can impact business growth much earlier on in the process. And for me, that's very exciting, because I think I've been in companies that have been well established for 10 years, 20 years, and they had no formal L&D. And it is difficult to get a culture going on learning. It's difficult to get a culture going on talent and everything else. So it's very exciting to see some of these newer, younger companies investing in training early and bringing in the right talent to scale. So I want to see that trend continue to grow in a big way. And so, yeah, I'm taking a little bit of a different spin with that answer than probably others would. But I think it's an important thing for us to notice. And it's an important thing for all my future CEOs and company leaders to hear. If you're going to start a company, you need to bring in L&D much earlier than you think you should, because we're a critical part of the business.
So I love that you have a different answer, first of all. So great. Do you think it has to do with generations? When I started work, the baby boomers were the big generation going on. And I remember my first leadership job. I show up, I've got an office, I got a staff, all this stuff. And one of the leaders comes in and says, oh, are you the new trainer? Really? But I think the younger generation, the millennials, maybe the Gen Zers, I feel like they value the learning provided by a corporation even more than the pay.
Yes, I think it's very much generational. And they want their career path. They want to know how they get ahead. And they know they can't get ahead without different types of support from the organization. And that means training and development and support to go to this conference or that conference or to get an additional certification, whatever it is. The newer generation, the Gen Z and millennial, are much more vocal about what they need to be successful in the job. Whereas I think for me, being Gen X, I was more like, oh, I got to be scrappy. I got to figure it out on my own. I got to find it all on my own. Whereas this generation is being much more forward and about it. And I think for those of us in Gen X, for those of us creating these companies, we missed it, because we had to find it ourselves. And now when we're out there creating new businesses, we're making it a priority. So I definitely think the generation has helped. I think the change of technology has also helped. You know, it's much more accessible. You can do a lot of training for free if you want to online, which wasn't really available when I was first starting my career. I mean, at my first career, I was carrying around a beeper and a flip phone. My first cell phone was a bag phone in college. So like, it's just changed so much what you can do and what you have access to. And I think that's really changed how some of our newer leaders are thinking about learning and development.
Yeah, you're taking me back. So I'm Gen X too. And yes, my first job, only the administrative staff had computers and we didn't have mice. I mean, it was still DOS based.
Yeah, I remember telling my niece about a bag phone and she's like, what do you mean? And I'm like, you need to just Google what a bag phone looks like. Just trust me. It's classic.
You got to pull out an old movie like Wall Street and show her.
Yes, yeah, where he's holding on to the brick phone. Yes, yeah.
You remember those? Yeah, no, I didn't get my first cell phone until I was in my late 20s.
So. Yes, yeah.
Wow, yeah, no, I remember the pagers and I was like, my gosh.
This episode is brought to you by Training Pros, the award-winning contract staffing agency that works exclusively with learning and development professionals to match the right consultants to client projects. If you're in corporate L&D and have more projects than people, Let the industry practitioners at Training Pros provide you with the right L&D consultant to start your project with confidence. Find out how we make finding quality consultants easy by scheduling a consultation at www.trainingpros.com.
Well, what do you think are going to be the biggest changes we will be seeing in the next 5 to 10 years?
I really think we're going to start going towards a much more robust skills-based process. You know, I think today we live in this world of a lot of job descriptions that are really fanciful and all of this kind of stuff, but some of them lack very specific skills. But I think organizations are really going to start going to more skills-based thinking for positions and jobs. I think that project management skills are like skills that everybody should have, but are very rarely listed in a job description. But when you get into a company, you need somebody who has natural project management skills or is willing to be a project manager on almost all work initiatives. And if you don't have a separate project management team in your company, who's going to do this and who's going to organize it? So that's like one of those skills I see as number one needed all the time, but is very rarely articulated anywhere. So I do think we're kind of going to go more towards this skills-based focused for positions and jobs and maybe change how we think about job descriptions. I think that's going to be number one. I think that AI, this is where I'm going to add AI into this discussion. We're going to need to have better AI adapted tools. And those AI adapted tools are going to have to be able to integrate with all the other systems we have in our organization. Everybody's coming up with our tool does AI and our tool does AI, but does your AI talk to this AI? Because I'm in an integrated platform and it all has to talk to each other and it all has to connect. And also, by the way, the search terms for anything and everything has to be much easier to build and to use. So I think in the next 5 to 10 years, everything we have from a tech perspective has to have AI that is smooth and integratable and much easier to use and clearer and makes searching and like personalized learning much easier to uncover and find. And if the technology we have today can't do that, you're going to be out. So I think those are kind of the two big things that I think are must-haves in the next, 5 to 10 years.
I think those are great answers. Definitely, I'm hearing more and more about the skills-based economy versus the job description, like you said, or competency-based, which was all the rage 20 years ago. And yeah, I've been looking a lot at the AI tools. I recently went to DevLearn, and as I was going through the gigantic vendor area, every single tool was like, we have AI, we have AI, we have AI. And when I would stop and talk to them, I'm like, it's almost like you put ChatGPT into your tool that existed. You didn't really create an AI tool that goes across and does what everything needs to be done.
Yes, I'm having this debate all the time with these vendors that reach out. I'm like, I'm sorry, but I can get ChatGPT for free on my other screen and just quickly ask it a question. So you haven't shown me that you can do anything different than that. If you can show me you can do something different than that, then we can have a conversation. But like, I'm not going to pay all this extra money for your AI tool when I can just use it for free on my browser.
That's exactly what I felt like I was saying to them. I was like, how is this different than using ChatGPT?
Yes,
or
exactly.
Pilot or whichever tool. Let's switch gears for a second and let's talk about who has been your most influential professional mentor in your career.
Okay. This is going to also be where I flip the answer on its head and say, all the worst managers I've ever had have been my best mentors. And it's only because I've learned so much about what not to do from these folks that it's like, it's really influenced my leadership style today. So those leaders I had that didn't listen, that made judgment without, facts in place, that, lacked empathy, lacked understanding, weren't advocates for the team, that were more focused on their own career versus the career of the people that they were leading, that, almost competed with you. Because, I believe you should hire people better than you. So having a manager who doesn't do that is a very difficult person to work for. I think my best mentors have been my worst managers because I've just learned about all the things to not do. And that's helped shape my leadership philosophy today.
That is flipping the script on the answer. Oh, gosh, I love that. It's kind of like when you see those comedies and they talk about, well, dating you really helped me because now I know what I don't want.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So if you've ever been married and divorced like me, you're like, okay, I'm not doing that again. So, yep.
Oh, yes. I divorced 16 years now. It's like, no, I'm not doing that. Oh, I love that answer, though, because I think we can learn as much from the bad behavior as we can the good behavior.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think some of the best parts of leadership training aren't necessarily in the classroom. It's really about being in meetings and watching the demonstration of other leaders around you. And you pick up how people respond to certain things and certain behaviors. It's honestly one of the best ways to learn how to be a better leader is to watch it going on around you.
You've touched on this a bit, but you might have a different answer. What do you think is the most important skill in our talent today?
Yeah, I think I'll go back to that skills idea where I think like just skills-based workforce planning is probably the best thing that we can do. And I think that it's going to be the one kind of tactic that will allow career paths to be clearer, will allow companies to find those transferable people and transferable skills that can fit for a variety of roles in an organization. I think it will lead to more retention of people because we all know, and I've experienced this myself, where I'm in a job and my skills are not being used to their max capacity and you feel stuck. So if companies don't start thinking in that way and start leveraging that talent that's sitting idle, they'll just continue to have attrition issues and things like that. So I think we need to kind of really focus on talent and their skills. And I think it will be we'll see a significant shift in the workforce if we start thinking that way.
I'm eager to start learning more and more about this. It's hard to get too much about this except maybe through some books.
Yes.
Webinars don't touch on it enough to really teach me much. Maybe I should go and audit a course at the university nearby.
And I will just say this. By the way, I haven't figured out how to do this 100% in my own organization. Skills are tough. It's tough to list them all. It's tough to think about. Everybody has opinions about them. But I do think it's where we're going to have to go. So we're going to have to figure out how to make it work and how to make it make sense and how to scale it.
Well, let's shift gears one more time. What is your favorite source of industry news and information?
I'm a big fan of Training Industry and ATD. I think they always post really relevant articles, good magazines, good content. I also think LinkedIn is a great place to go. There's so many wonderful organizations, consultants, and things like that post great articles, references, podcasts, you know, all of that stuff that you can find. I'm also a big fan of certain, you know, very popular figures like Adam Grant, Simon Sinek. Like, just, they may not be very L&D focused, but they talk a lot about organizational behavior and thought process that I think is helpful to an L&D leader and how to think more broadly. You know, Adam Grant just had a very interesting post about psychological safety that from Amy Edmondson, who really is the creator of the concept of psych safety. And I was like, okay, this is, psych safety is very good, you know, and connecting it to inclusive leadership, which should be a part of leadership programs. And so anyhow, that's a list of multiple things, I realize, not just one, but there's lots of good resources out there.
Yeah, so I agree with you. I mean, I'm a member of both of those, Training Industry and ATD, but if you only read just L&D information, you become like this siloed tunnel vision type organization. So you have to spread out. And I love Simon Sinek. I mean, who doesn't? And LinkedIn is truthfully my biggest source of news every morning. I check email, check Teams, and then I check LinkedIn.
Yeah, I think like LinkedIn has been my new like social media just because there's always so many good posts and I feel like I'm getting a good amount of news, press releases, but also just such relevant content to what I need to do every day at work that it is worthwhile to just sit and scroll it for a little bit and see what's going on.
I've learned many new terms that I was like, I've never heard of that. Let me look that up. I need to know what that means.
Yeah.
So I follow influencers on there in our field a lot. And I just recently learned about Ring the Bell on LinkedIn. If you want to see someone's posts every time there's a little bell icon, you just click it and they're going to show up in your feed every day. I'm like, oh, this is handy.
Oh, I like that. I'm going to have to use that. Yes.
My favorite question, because I'm a bookworm, What is one book you would recommend to anyone wanting to be a learning and development leader?
Well, one of my favorite books is by Daniel Pink, and it's called Drive. It's really about how driven we are and what are we going to do to move ahead. And I always think that I'm a leader of a team and I want to drive them to be successful. I want to drive them to be seen in the organization. I want them to have a growth mindset, right? Because in learning and development, all we do all day is promote growth mindset. And if we don't practice growth mindset ourselves, then how are we going to be good L&D leaders? So I love the book Drive. I think it's great. And I'm a big Daniel Pink fan. So all of his books, I think, are great reads.
Daniel Pink is a great one to recommend to people. I love that one. One of the things I do with these is I download the Audible for these books one at a time. I'm listening to one right now that a leader recommended on the podcast, The Motive. And Daniel Pink is going to make the list for sure.
Enjoy it.
I'm sure I will. You know, when you are a big bookworm, that's the thing to do.
Yes, exactly.
Well, I have so enjoyed talking to you today on our podcast. I'm sure that our listeners will really get a lot out of all the things you said. I also love that you had a lot of different answers than the same old answers that we get a lot. So I appreciate that.
Yeah, no problem. Sometimes I have a tendency to kind of do the opposite of everybody else, but I think it's okay. It balances us out when we think in a little bit of a different light.
I actually think we absolutely need people who will always try to think a little bit outside the box and color outside the lines a little bit.
Yes.
As my thank you to you, our charity at Training Pros is we plant trees around the world. And to date, we've planted almost 5,000 trees in the world. And we'd like to plant 5 trees in your name, if there's no problem with that. And we'll
no, I love that. Thank you.
You're welcome. And it's just one of those things, as a woman-owned company, you know, we do have men in our company, but we seem to really love to do things to help the world. And so we do this charity on an ongoing basis. And so we will send you that certificate. And I can't thank you enough for joining us today.
Thank you so much. I really enjoyed the conversation.
That's it for this week's Learning Leader Spotlight. Join us next week as we interview another learning leader. And have a great day.
Thanks for joining us for the latest episode of Learning Leader Spotlight, interviews with corporate L&D leaders. You'll find links in the show notes to any resources mentioned on today's show. If you're enjoying our podcast, please subscribe so you never miss an episode and leave us a 5-star review.